Iowans have started weighing in on a plan to redraw the lines of the state's congressional and legislative election boundaries. There are three online hearings this week for Iowans to speak out about the maps. The last one is tonight. Iowa's congressional and state legislative lines are drawn by the legislature, but with substantial input from a nonpartisan advisory body and a bipartisan advisory committee, both mandated by the statute. The Legislative Services Agency created the maps. The new lines put dozens of Iowa House and Iowa Senate members in districts with one or more other incumbents. The standards required population equality, keeping political subdivisions, counties and cities, for example, intact as much as possible, contiguity and compactness. In this first plan, the 4th district would sprawl diagonally as far east as Chickasaw County up north down to Fremont County in the far southwest corner of Iowa. The map would also return Johnson County, the home of Iowa City, to the 1st congressional district. Christopher Larimer is an associate professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa. He says he was not surprised by the growth of the big 4th district.
To me, that wasn't entirely unexpected that it would be geographically the largest district. I'm just surprised, and maybe I shouldn't be, how much it keeps expanding if you look over the last two redistricting cycles, because, you know, I think with the way Iowa's population trends are going, where, you know, more and more people are concentrated in the more urban areas and fewer in the more rural areas, I think once you try to divide up Iowa, given that the more urban areas, you know, 8 out of the 10 more urban counties are in the central and eastern part of the state, I think the way that you divide it up, you only have so many options, and you're going to probably have one district that is going to be very, very large, and obviously predominantly a rural district. So to me, it wasn't too surprising that it was the largest. I think, you know, you just got it's going to be interesting to see how this goes, you know, the next redistricting cycle. If the population trends continue, do we just see a sort of a shrinking of the other three districts because they are so concentrated in terms of where the population is?
The second district, you and some other political watchers have said the Democrats still have an advantage, but it's a little smaller, right?
Yeah, I think so. And that's, you know, some people who've looked at it just in terms of the presidential vote share in the last election. I think that was the conclusion of someone else. I haven't looked at it myself, but someone else who was looking at it on just a county by county basis and looking at each district in terms of how it went for in the last election, the presidential election. You know, the first congressional district now is more of a, at least if you look at 2020 vote, it went more for Biden. The second district's a little bit closer, and it's still that third congressional district that's the most competitive. But again, that's just based on the last presidential election. I think the big thing here too is always thinking about the strength of the challenger when I'm trying to think of all these districts. I mean, that's still going to be, I think, a big factor for at least the three districts. I think the fourth district, you know, that's a pretty safe Republican district.
Are Democrats worried at all about this?
You know, I haven't heard anything. I think for Democrats, I think for them, again, it is to my point I just made, I think they need to be, if they're probably focused on how strong a challenger can they have, right? We know that the incumbency reelection rate for members of Congress, if you go back the last 20 years, 90% are reelected. So even though people may be frustrated by what they see going on in Congress, if 90% of incumbents are reelected, I think that's the number one challenge for Democrats in the first and second district. Are they going to find a candidate who can compete with incumbents?
What about the state lawmakers, though? I saw that something like 10 or 11 of them they're going to have, you know, two in those districts, two lawmakers. So what do they do about that?
Yeah, I haven't seen the latest number. Someone pointed out, you know, 50 to 60 potentially incumbents across those 150 state legislators are going to be paired up. They just have to make a decision about what they want to do. Do they want to stay in their district? Do they want to move? I mean, the decision for some state legislators may simply be that this is just a time to move on to something different, that they may want to retire, may want to get out of elected office, just the politics of it doesn't work. And, I don't think that's going to take a little bit longer to kind of work out, because for state legislative districts, you know, typically the challengers in those districts wait to declare, or we often see a longer time frame as far as when they declare, you know, late in the year prior to the election or even an election year, where the challenger, we really know and have a good sense of who the challengers are. It's not like a congressional district where the challengers are coming out, you know, 2 years before the election. So I think that's going to be harder to figure out, you know, who among the incumbents are going to run against one another, who's going to move into a different district. And obviously that depends on party affiliation of each one of those incumbents, as well as the party, you know, the party registration in each one of those districts, who's going to simply just retire and move on to something else. I think that's the really interesting part. I think it's too early to know how that's going to play out.
There's a lot that has to happen for these maps to be stamped with approval. So if state lawmakers reject these proposed maps, in a special session, the Legislative Service Agency would create a second set of maps, and then lawmakers would vote to accept or refuse. If that proposal is rejected, lawmakers need to approve the LSA's third proposal, but legislators would be able to amend that proposal. This really is so much, isn't there?
It is, but it's unique, and you know that's what those, particularly for the first two plans, that's what makes Iowa unique in terms of keeping it nonpartisan, right? That really those first two plans, they're just voting up or down, and that's all they can do. And the LSA is just drawing those maps based entirely on population, and they have to keep it within 1% of an ideal population for each one of those districts. And so that, you know, for the first two plans, politics are completely removed. Once we get to that third plan, that's where it's going to be. It could potentially be very, very interesting. I mean, but, you know, typically, at least going back to 1991, the first plan has been accepted, I think, in 1991 and 2011. The second plan was accepted in 2001. You'd have to go back to the first time that Iowa started this process in 1981, where the third plan was adopted. But so typically, you know, the first or second plans are accepted, and in part because it's a game of chance for state legislators. They could reject it, but then the plan coming back could be even worse in terms of the party makeup of their district.
You know, it's hard to believe that there was a fifth district in Iowa at one time.
Yeah. And you look back at the size of those districts. So you go back to that 2001 redistricting cycle when we had five districts. The ideal population in those districts was 582,000 constituent or 582,000 people. Now we're talking about congressional districts where each member of Congress is representing 797,000 people. So just the number of people that each member of Congress is now representing has grown tremendously. I mean, 200,000 more people that each member of Congress is representing just in the last 20 years. So you kind of wonder where that's going to stop, because that creates issues as far as representation, right? How closely, how well can you understand the interests of 797,000 people versus 582,000 people? And obviously it's easier with technology to be in touch, but still, that's those districts in terms of the number of people continue to grow.
That was Christopher Larimer, an associate professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa. The League of Women Voters of Iowa is calling on the Iowa legislature to approve that plan for redistricting. And a legislative redistricting plan crafted by Republicans failed to overcome a filibuster in Nebraska on Monday, sending lawmakers back to negotiate on how to configure the state's legislative districts to account for population shifts. In the officially nonpartisan 49-seat legislature, 32 seats are held by Republicans and 17 by Democrats. South Dakota lawmakers are also redrawing the state's political boundaries and debating how to define the state's two largest urban areas, Sioux Falls and Rapid City. The state's population has shifted toward cities over the last decade, and the most contentious political lines are likely to be in the cities. Heavily urban districts and tribal regions in South Dakota are the only places where Democrats have been able to find any political success in recent years in South Dakota.